Welcome to The Hospitalist and the Society of Hospital Medicine. I'm Casey Quinlan. This edition of our podcast features highlights of the July 2015 issue of The Hospitalist. Job hunting in hospital medicine is something every hospitalist will have to do at least once. Cheryl DeVita, a senior search consultant at Cheka Search in St. Louis, says that meeting as many of the HM team as you can at a hospital where you're interviewing is a good tactic.
And you want to make sure, if you're a hospitalist joining a larger group, that you're meeting a number of the hospitalists that are a part of the team. And I typically, as I get the itinerary from our client, and I'm going to share it with the hospitalist who's going to interview, I will let them know who on that itinerary is the more recent addition to the team versus who's been there for a while, because I encourage them to ask, hey, what was it like when you were the newbie?
The latest in our 10 Things series is actually 11 things that gastroenterologists want hospitalists to know. Here's Dr. John Pandolfino, Chief of Gastroenterology and Hepatology at Northwestern University in Chicago, on how colonoscopies can be the wrong diagnostic choice, particularly in elderly patients with constipation.
A lot of people send us referrals for colonoscopy for constipation, and actually the yield of a colonoscopy for constipation is extremely low. And that's been shown and that's been documented in the literature that it's not a very good test. In fact, we treat constipation empirically, and if people don't respond to laxatives, I think one of the most important things that they do is then start thinking, does this patient have some pelvic floor dysfunction that would actually get better with pelvic floor therapy? A lot of elderly women, for instance, have issues with rectocele, prolapse, and so forth, and they have most of their diseases related to how the muscles interact in the pelvic area with the anal rectal junction. So I think that's also a very important component, is when you're looking at these people who have constipation, don't just keep blasting them with laxatives, both stimulant and saline. You know, you got to think that maybe there's an issue of a functional obstruction.
Gastroenterologist Dr. Robert Coben, academic coordinator for the Gastrointestinal Fellowship Program at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia, warns that a gastro bleed can be a symptom that calls for a gastro consult.
And then the other along those lines in terms of GI bleeding, you know, many times patients may have anemia, heme-positive stool, iron deficiency, and obviously it's an appropriate thing to call a GI consult, at least to get a workup started, because we've had it happen a few times where this occurred. The patient was discharged, and they really didn't get proper follow-up, and it ended up they had a colon cancer. So it kind of delayed that diagnosis. So I think you have to be aware of, you know, especially in somebody over the age of 40 or 50, if they have an iron deficiency anemia or a heme-positive stool, the first thing you need to really exclude is a colon cancer. And that's happened a few times. And then if the one thing would be is if the patient were to be discharged, that the patient's given proper follow-up, because you know, a lot of times patients are in the hospital and then they don't come back for their appointments. So as a subspecialist, even though obviously you'd like to do the full workup as an outpatient, you get a little uneasy. Is the patient going to come back? You're going to lose the patient. The patient ends up having a cancer and that wasn't diagnosed.
Hospital medicine plays a pivotal role in post-acute care. This month's cover feature takes a deep dive into that topic, with one sidebar looking at the non-physician HM practitioner's role. Physician assistant Edwin Lopez spearheaded a project at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Enumclaw, Washington. Here's how he built buy-in for his mission of ending the readmission revolving door with the skilled nursing facility across the street from his hospital.
My bottom line is that I'm proposing to you two things. One, the readmission rate that we have for this facility is unacceptable. And if we continue at this rate, all of us will be unemployed at this facility. We'll be going elsewhere and we'll shut this place down. There's one reality. Number two reality is that you can readmit these people every 2 to 3 weeks because they send them over to the emergency room and the emergency room just calls up for us to admit them. Or think of this. What if we go across the street, spend an hour or two a day, decrease our readmission rates, see these people who are sick or in trouble or interface with families and nurses, avoid the readmissions, and that way we don't have to keep doing the same history and physical and going and seeing these people every 2 or 3 weeks in the hospital. What do you think of that? Oh, I like that idea, Ed. That's a pretty good idea. I said, okay, cool. I looked at the data in February of this year, and it's remarkable. Today, our readmission rate at that facility is about 7%. And from the facility standpoint, I understand that all-cause readmission from the facility standpoint, I think his last report I saw in January was, I think, about 9.5%. So, is everybody happy? To say the least.
Choosing Wisely has gained plenty of steam since its launch in 2012. Here's Dr. Mena Gupta, hospitalist and assistant professor of internal medicine at Rush University in Chicago, talking about how Rush worked to reduce unnecessary transfusions.
So none of these were a hard stop. For example, it's not like if you didn't fall within any of these that the computer system would not let you order it. I mean, people can always click the indication of, you know, hemoglobin less than 7 or active bleeding with hemoglobin less than 8, for example, or something along those lines, you know, because if someone's actively bleeding and they need blood, then active bleeding is one of the options. One of the other reasons for taking away the category of other is that now we're able to track more carefully and more precisely why patients are getting blood. Because previously, everyone was just clicking other, and it makes it very difficult to kind of track within our EMR what people are being transfused for.
At UCSD, Dr. Gregory Samen tackles healthcare value issues as a project for residents, tagging it the Value Improves Quality program. Stanford's Dr. Lisa Shea says that her team's efforts on reducing unnecessary transfusions also improved hospital mortality stats.
We actually found that overall our mortality rates did improve throughout the post-intervention period. And so I don't know if it was caused, but it was directly impacted by our decreased blood use, but we definitely saw improved blood outcomes after our more appropriate use of blood. So we saw actually improved outcomes.
The Hospitalist has a new SHM podcast buddy, Before the White Coat, featuring conversations between SHM CEO Larry Wellickson and hospital medicine leaders revealing the life experiences that led them to medicine. The podcast series is on the web at beforethewhitecoat.com. Here's a short clip of Larry's conversation with Bob Wachter.
In high school, I got incredibly interested in politics because it was during Watergate, and I thought this was amazingly interesting. And so when I left for college, I had decided that I wanted to be a political science major and struggled a little bit with, you know, could you do that and be pre-med? And it was just the era where it was becoming clear that that was okay. Up until maybe 5 years before that, you just didn't do that. If you were pre-med, you would major in bio or chem. That was the era where med schools were beginning to think differently about this. And so it was, I remember seeing one table in some journal somewhere that showed the acceptance rate of kids with various majors, and music was the highest and English was second. And so I said, all right, maybe I'll major in poli-sci and somehow things will work out.
Read the July issue of The Hospitalist for more, including the 11 things gastroenterologists want hospitalists to know, this month's cover feature, New Frontier, an in-depth look at hospital medicine and post-acute care, three pieces on the integral role hospitalists are playing in health IT and clinical informatics, hospital medicine choosing wisely quality improvement projects you can start in your hospital today, a guest column, Quality is Job One, by CMS's Dr. Patrick Conway, profiles of Team Hospitalist members Lisa Courtney, MBA, a hospital administrator passionate about hospital medicine, and James Levy, a PA and senior fellow of hospital medicine. How Michigan hospitalist Dr. Brian Chen puts music and medicine together, advice for newly minted hospitalists on their first job search, this month's key clinical question, what should you do if you get a needle stick, and our monthly review of the latest in hospital medicine clinical literature. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month with more insights and opinions from leaders in hospital medicine.